Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon. It's me, Joe Forrester, Matt Beadle and Richard Lee. If you want to get in touch, please do so. All you need to do is search GK Union on Facebook. It's at GK Union on Twitter. The hashtag is GK Union on Instagram or hello at goalkeepersunion.net if you want to drop us an email. Right, let's get on with the show. Every week, our mailbag is increasingly bulging, and this week is no difference. We've had some more correspondence in. Matt, tell us who's written a nice letter in. I expect it's a handwritten letter, is it?
I wish it was a handwritten letter, mate. Not quite. It's an email, but lazy. We'll take it again.
Okay.
Continuing the theme here, mate. I like it. Yes, this is from a Chris Bullen from Isha. He said, hi guys, I listened to last week's podcast, great show as always, and there were lots of mentions of the best keepers in the world, De Gea, Edison, Lloris, Neuer, Oblak, etc., but no mention of Jordan Pickford. Given his heroics at the World Cup, wondered what you guys think he needs to do to be mentioned alongside those keepers. Is it anything specific, or just doing more of the same over the course of two or three more seasons?
I'm going to throw this at you two, first and foremost. Would you put him in that category yet?
No. No, and I mean, not. I don't mean to say that in quite such a disdainful way. He's obviously a very good keeper. But he's
cutting.
Not particularly, or he's not thoroughly consistent, I would say. And that is the biggest thing. If there's a keeper who every so often does something a little bit rash, and with him we talk about something like that every four or five games, and admittedly, in that period, there'll also be 10 amazing moments. But with someone like Jan Oblak and until about 18 months ago, Manuel Neuer, you're never really going to say that. They're totally consistent with their performances and what they do, and you can utterly rely on them. And that is what I think puts you in that very, very top bracket of top five keepers.
Do you know what? I very much agree with that. And the bit I'll add is that I think the difference between goalkeepers and maybe a striker. Look, a striker can go and have a Salah last season. You can go and score that many goals, and for that season, you are considered amongst the very best. For a goalkeeper, it's not as simple as that, because clean sheets aren't always down to you. You know, you can keep a number of clean sheets when the defence are fantastic. You know, it doesn't really mean that much. So actually, it's going to be something that is over a period of time. David De Gea is in that category now, but he's won, what, four Player of the Season awards in a row at Man United? Jordan Pickford was brilliant for large parts of last season, fantastic over the summer, and this season so far, he's been one of the standout performers. But it's not a long enough time yet. If he goes on and has a great Euros and another great World Cup, then I think in 2 to 4 years' time, he may well be in that category. Also, 2 to 4 years' time, a few of these goalkeepers we've mentioned may well have moved on. You know, we don't necessarily talk about Buffon in that same category at the moment, because he is in the next stage of his career. But 3 or 4 years ago, of course, he was very much part of that group.
He's also got that sidewinder, and I know that's something that's a part of his game, but if you as a keeper can develop almost a brand for yourself, I think it's going to become the Pickford sidewinder. Right,
I'll tell you what he's got the running sidewinder as well, that we were always taught, you come catch a cross, then before you kick the ball, take a moment to steady yourself. And it's something that we say to a lot of the young goalkeepers, take a moment, don't run to the edge of the box and kick it, because it's such a hard technique. But Jordan Pickford can do that. It seems like he doesn't need to break stride, and his timing on the side volley is so good that he actually saves a couple of seconds by doing that in order to release the ball. And how many times have we seen it where he releases a winger or a striker because of the speed of his distribution? So what he has done is he's now shown a lot of the goalkeepers that you don't necessarily need to take that second, but it is an incredibly hard skill to master.
Oh, keeper capers. So that erotically charged jingle can mean but one thing. It is, of course, time for Keeper Capers. What we talk about a lot on this show is second string goalkeepers, number twos, even number threes, people who don't necessarily get that number one jersey. There's very famous examples of people who've spent their whole career as a number two. One thinks of Steve Harper famously at Newcastle, who's one of the best examples in the Premier League. But Paulo Lopez blows that out of the water, the most successful number two of all time. 12 trophies in only 11 games in more than a decade at Benfica. Matt, this is a story that I know that you're particularly fond of. It's an extraordinary achievement, isn't it?
Incredible, yeah. I mean, he retired in July, and this came to light. BBC actually reported on this. He spent more than a decade at Benfica. He was released. He was there as a youth teamer. He was released in 2002 and then got re-signed in 2012. And he said at the time, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that they've signed me. Went on, and I think his most fruitful campaign was 5 games in a season. Mm-hmm. He made a great quote to the BBC. He said, "I was born to win." Brilliant.
He said as well that he must love the club, because he said, "Oh, not many people get to play for Benfica. I'm so proud of what I've achieved in my career." And I understand there's an element of camaraderie in any squad, but equally, to spend your entire career, and as Matt said, his most successful season was 5 games, that's slightly counterintuitive, because don't you become a footballer to play football?
Well, so here's the question to put to you. How many games? Sorry, 12?
Yeah. No, 11 games.
11 games in 12 years. Right, so 11 games. So that's the question. Would you rather play, and we'll bring it to England because it's the equivalent. So would you rather play 11 games for Man City or play 300 games for Barnsley?
Right. I completely see what you're saying, but does it depend on what you win in those 11 games at Manchester City?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, this is the question. I mean, even now, and when I'll talk to people about my career, I do touch on some of the bigger games I played. You know, I had one season in the Premier League, which I like to remind you guys of quite regularly, and I only played 11 games. But you know what? I speak about those 11 games arguably a lot more than the other couple of hundred that I played, because they were that big personally, and I remember them in a very fond way. Whereas a lot of the games you'll play on a Tuesday night away at Accrington Stanley, no disrespect to Accrington, it isn't necessarily etched into my memory like an FA Cup semi-final or a Premier League game away at Man City. So I would say for this particular goalkeeper, if he was third choice for the large part of his career, the question is, would he have played in the top league in Portugal? Maybe, maybe not. He might have had to play in the second tier. So if it was a choice out of those two, then I fully understand why he did what he did. I did it for a large period of time at Watford. I was number two without playing for a long period of time. I knew I could have moved down, which I eventually did, because what you mentioned, Joe, hit me. It made me realise that actually I haven't played that many games. If I am going to play, I'm probably going to need to move down to rebuild my career, which I did. And I certainly don't regret. But even now, I still speak about a lot of the Watford games I played, because they were such big games at the time.
But if your whole career had been in the Prem and you're getting a handful of games every year, then I think you would be less satisfied.
I'll tell you what it comes down to as well, is what your goals are. And look, there's no right or wrong motivation in my book. And there's no right or wrong goals. Like, for some people, they want to play 600-700 games of football. For others, they'll enjoy football, but actually they enjoy turning up and training every day. They enjoy the environment of being around the place, and they don't necessarily need that buzz on a Saturday. There are a lot of footballers, believe it or not, that are out there that are happy to be part of that and enjoy the existence of being paid well in order to train, in order to be part of an environment like that. And my guess is that his goals would have been along the line of that. I think if he was that desperate to play more games, then he wouldn't have stayed for the period of time that he did. So, and there's other examples. You mentioned Steve Harper, the likes of Stuart Taylor is another classic example. And again, there's nothing right or wrong about that. He's been very good at what he's done. And when he has had to step in, he's done a job. So a lot of teams have seen that as being the perfect number two. There'll be more and more goalkeepers that are seen in that light of being the perfect number two. And there's something to that as well. If you're happy to see the number one do well and you're happy to support them and to help them be the best they can be, then there is a role within that, and there is a lot out there at the moment that are doing exactly that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because one of the things I do quite like is when an older keeper comes in as a number two. So obviously our guest this week is the great Brad Friedel. He came into Tottenham, he was already in his 40s, but having someone like that who's been playing for 20 years, played all over the world, played in loads of massive games, is so handy for every keeper at the club.
So, and this brings me on to a really interesting subject, which at the moment we're seeing lots of different dynamics and lots of different structures when it comes to the goalkeepers at a club. So ordinarily in the Premier League, you'll have a very strong one, of course. You'll then have a strong two and normally an older number three. So the likes of Lee Grant or Rob Green being good examples at the moment where you bring in a good character who can sit as a three, unlikely to play, but if needed, you know you can count on them. That then allows your younger goalkeepers to go out on loan. Now, the further down the leagues we go, the less that's available to the clubs because, of course, go down into League Two, they won't have the budget to bring in a 1-2 and a 3. So what you're seeing a lot now, and this weekend in particular, we've seen it in a big way, is that a lot of clubs will go with an outright 1, they'll spend all their budget on a 1, and then they'll either go with a kid on the bench or they'll even put their goalkeeping coach on the bench. The reason they do this is that if the number 1 gets injured, you're then allowed an emergency loan because the rules of an emergency loan state, long as you haven't got a pro on the books who's played less than 5 games, you can bring in an emergency loan. So a lot of League 2 clubs have thought about this. Imagine you had a budget of $2,500 a week to spend on goalkeepers. You could get a number 1 at $1,500 and a number 2 at $1,000. A lot of them are saying, I'll tell you what, we're going to spend our entire budget on a number 1. And then what we'll do is if that number 1 gets injured, we'll go and fish in the championship for maybe a number 3 to then come in and play a game. And this weekend it happened with two teams in particular, Wycombe Wanderers. They had both goalkeepers went down injured and they loaned in Matt Ingram for one game from QPR. Interestingly, they wouldn't have been able to do it normally, but the reason they were able to do it was that it's international break. So the QPR have said, you know what, he is our number 2. Ordinarily, we wouldn't allow him out on loan, but because it's our international break, because there's links with Gareth Ainsworth and QPR, because Matt Ingram's been at Wycombe before, do you know what, we'll do you a favour, let him get a game as well. You go in and play a game, played really well. They got a draw at Sunderland. He was excellent by all accounts. So it did him a favour. The other one was Barnsley. Barnsley's goalkeeper, Adam Davis, who's done brilliantly this season, he's now with Wales on a regular basis. So he was away with the national team. They didn't have a goalkeeper. They've then loaned in Jordan Smith from Nottingham Forest. Again, a win-win for Jordan. Hasn't played at all for Nottingham Forest this season. He gets a game for Barnsley. 2-0 victory. Did very well. And it means that Adam Davis will come in next week. And of course, he'll come back and he'll just enter the team again and carry on as he has done. But it's a really interesting dynamic that we're seeing that further down the leagues, they're not all able to have a strong 1, strong 2 and a younger number 3. So you're seeing lots of different ideas being used in League 1, League 2 and trying to use the rules as best they can so that if they do have a goalkeeping crisis, they can bring somebody in order to do the job.
Matt, I think we've just learned something.
What a lesson we've just been taught there. Incredible.
It's actually very interesting stuff. And a big shout out to Paulo Lopez, who is now a coach at Benfica. 11 games, 12 trophies.
Oh, keeper capers.
Our guest this week is a legend of goalkeeping. He played 310 consecutive Premier League games, played at Liverpool, Blackburn, Tottenham, also played in Turkey and is now the head coach of New England Revolution. Please welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Brad Friedel. Brad, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, thank you, Brad. It's lovely to have you on board. Now, first, let's start, obviously, with your relationship with our very own Richard Lee. You know Rich, of course.
I do know Rich. We played together.
He described himself in his time at Blackburn. He said he was sort of a young, doughy-eyed, hopeful young keeper. And he was a vital cog in that machine up there at Ewood Park. I mean, Brad, just firstly, would you second that? Or is that absolute nonsense from Rich?
The vital cog? No. Rich came up... So Kevin Hitchcock, the goalkeeping coach at the time, knew Rich from your Watford days, correct?
That's right. Yeah,
and brought Rich up. We had a bit of a gap in age, if you like, because we had a very good young goalkeeper that was up and coming, but was too young at the time, Frankie Fielding, and he brought Rich in at the time to try to apply some pressure to me, be the good pro that he is, and if he says that he was the important cog, then that's what we'll call it.
There's one thing, actually, as well, I'd like to pick up on from your time at Blackburn, because Rich told us something that we were very surprised by, that you're actually very zen, and you practice yoga and stretching and that kind of thing, and have this image of you as kind of a Jedi master to Luke Skywalker.
I do remember very early on, Brad, you gave me a book, Yoga for Men, and I wish I'd have done a little bit more of it. I might have gone on a little bit longer.
Yeah, I did do a lot of yoga. I still do a lot of yoga today. I don't know about Zen, but when I was 29, 30, I tore my quad a couple of times, and I hadn't been injured in my career at all. And when I was doing my rehabilitation, the therapist at the time, who was from Holland, suggested it to me, and it was something that really helped out, and I carried on, and I still carry on as I'm 47 years of age today doing it. But there is a meditation element to it, of course. I wouldn't consider myself in the Zen category, but it is something, the older that I got, the more I looked after myself. And I was always very fortunate in my younger years not to have gotten injured too much. And I also tried to keep myself as fit as humanly possible. But like most of us, if we treated our bodies when we were in our mid to late 30s or 40s, if we did that when we were 19, 20, then most all of our careers could have been long. I was very fortunate that I did pick it up in time enough, and my career lasted till I was 44, so I'm thankful for that.
Obviously, a lot of people will be aware of you in the UK from, firstly, when you're at Liverpool, but actually, your time in the UK started before that, didn't you? You had trials at Forest, at Celtic, at Newcastle. What was that period like? Did you think you were going to get a chance to play over here?
Yeah, well, with Liverpool back, I think it was back 92, I was very close to signing the contract, and then Graham Souness parted ways with Liverpool, and I did sign a contract with Nottingham Forest, only I couldn't get a work permit. I did sign a contract with Newcastle, and my permit was denied. I signed a contract with Sunderland, and my work permit was denied. I went to Brøndby in Denmark, and then I went to Galatasaray, and Liverpool came in again when Roy Evans was in charge. And we're fortunate to get the work permit through on that attempt. But it took about 5 years, all in all, to get that work permit. So there were some frustrating times, but there was also some very fortunate times in there because I got to be a part of two wonderful clubs, which was Brøndby and Galatasaray. Incredible times of my life, especially in Turkey. And I was also able for a short time to go to Columbus Crew in the inaugural season of MLS. So, you take the frustrations and you try to make them positive. And I was able to play for some wonderful clubs in the meantime.
Brad, you mentioned Galatasaray there, and obviously you followed Graham Souness to Turkey. Now, the atmosphere in Istanbul is obviously quite fierce. It's quite hostile, and goalkeepers are normally the players that are closest to that hostility. What was that experience like for you, and have you ever experienced worse since?
Yeah, I think the closest to it would be in our CONCACAF region over here when you go play away in El Salvador, Costa Rica, or Mexico. I don't want to use the word violent, but because I did enjoy all my time there, but the energy that comes from the stands, especially in that Galatasaray Fenerbahce game, there are very few derbies that rival it. I've again been really fortunate to play and be around some very big derbies. You have the Villa Birmingham, Liverpool, Everton. You have the Tottenham Arsenal, of course. We had the Blackburn Burnley, which unless you ever been part of that, I wouldn't have realized how hatred that one could be. But the Fenerbahce Galatasaray one is something that if you can play in that one, you can play and do well. You can play in any of them, and the pressure that you have from the media, the written media, and also the television media, the fans, the players themselves, and you can see the anxiety on some of the local boys as the week or the days near during the build-up to the games. And once the whistle blew, it was great games to be a part of. And we played them in the cup as well, home and away legs. And, you could kick off at 8 p.m. or 10 p.m. or whatever, and the stadium will be near enough full by 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So, special times. And to get that experience at somewhat of a young age was invaluable.
Not many goalkeepers have got to experience the jubilation of scoring a goal, but of course you have. So got to talk about that goal. Charlton Athletic, the Valley, 2004. Above all else, a very instinctive striker's finish.
Yeah, left foot, Rich. Get yeah. that one. You had the... it's funny. I just did the most I've ever spoken about that goal just recently, because I think someone was doing an article on the goalkeepers that have scored in the Premier League. And it's something that I didn't like talking about, because, Rich, you know me. I only really cared about winning the wins and the losses. And right after we equalized, Charlton came down and scored, and they won 3-2. So it's nothing that I ever really wanted to speak about. I guess now that I'm retired, I can take a little bit of gratification and that I scored a goal, but still, every time I think about it, I have this like warm feeling of the ball going off my left foot into the goal, and then a sunken feeling knowing that we lost 3-2.
Trust me, Brad, Rich is nodding along, but let me tell you, if he had scored a goal, then we would never hear the end of it here on this podcast.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you mentioned earlier that you played at Villa, and of course we know you're at Spurs as well. So when you're at Tottenham, there was a point where you're the same age as Tony Jimenez, who was the goalkeeping coach then. I mean, that's what is it about goalkeepers that allows you to have that career longevity over outfield players?
Well, for one, we don't have to cover the amount of kilometers that the outfield players do. In saying that, it's really important that you do keep yourself physically fit, so you're not playing with a weight vest on, so to speak, as you can gain weight. With a goalkeeper, I think mentally, if you want to carry on, and obviously you have to be of a certain quality to keep carrying on, but if you mentally want to do it, and you're fortunate enough not to have big injuries in the shoulders and the knees and the hips, you can carry on till the latter years. And your body will tell you, and your mind will tell you when it's time to stop. And I remember when I went to Mauricio and told him that I was retiring, he even mentioned, he goes, you don't have to. There's still a place for you here. And that was at 44 years of age. And it was just time for me. I mean, I wanted to go into something else. I wanted to pursue other endeavors in the game, of course. But there's been a lot of very, very good goalkeepers that have played into and past their 40s, and it's something that will continue to be able to be done. You just mentally have to want to do it. There is a discipline to being a professional player, and as the years go by, the players are not getting smaller and slower. They're just getting bigger and faster. So you have to look after yourself even that much more. But it's if you want to play for a long time and you can keep yourself injury free, you probably pick the best position for it.
Is psychology an aspect? We mentioned the yoga and the meditation, and that might be quite unique to you, I suppose. But having met quite a lot of goalkeepers, you do seem to have a different mentality to outfield players, and that's because it's a very specific position. Do you feel that goalkeepers have a different mindset to their teammates?
Yeah, you have to. That's for sure. I mean, I think all sportsmen and sportswomen, the ones that get to the top of their profession, will probably have one character trait in common, that they all want to win and they're incredibly competitive. The other trait that they probably have in common is that they're very good at their profession. Goalkeeping. There's a lot of goalkeepers, and I would say probably the number one, two, and three at every Premier League club, for instance, and maybe even the fourth and the top academy goalkeeper, all good shot stoppers. Most of them will have very good strengths, maybe a couple of weaknesses, one or two things. But what separates the top ones from the others are what happens when you make a mistake, what happens when you get some fan abuse, what happens when you get some media abuse, how do you deal with it? Does one mistake turn into twos, threes, and fours? Can you just block it all out? All those sorts of scenarios. And not everyone is built with this incredible work ethic. And if you can find the players and the goalkeepers that can self-motivate, that's a big helpful tool also, because not every club, not every season you go into are you going to have comparable number one, number two, and number three. And if your number one is head and shoulders better than the others? You know, is he competitive or does he get complacent? All things like that. I mean, I went through a sort of a terrible time of superstitions at one stage in my career. And, you know, when you soon grow out of those as you get older, but, you know, you play a game, it goes well, and you want to do the same thing, and then you think that that's the reason why instead of your own ability. And I think that's also something a little bit dangerous for sportsmen and women to get involved in. And I think in the goalkeeping position, you can't let things like that take over your mind. So you do have to have a strong mind to sort of break out of that. It could start from the food you eat. It could start to even walking around the penalty spot instead of on it. And that loads of little things. And you quickly figure out that they're all meaningless. I remember speaking to Martin Keown once about it. He said he ended up getting to a point in his career where he said, you know, my superstition is that I can't be superstitious anymore. I think that's probably the best way to be.
Obviously, for a period, we had an influx of keepers from the US in the Premier League. None at present. Any particular reason for that? And I want to touch on one American I know is getting a lot of credit and a lot of praise at the moment, Zach Steffen over in America, and whether you think we could see him in the Premier League at any point soon.
Right. Well, one of the reasons why you're not seeing the influx is because we have a professional league now. When the likes of myself and Jürgen Sommer, Casey Keller, Mike Allman, Ian Foyer all came over, we didn't have a professional league here. So we had to find somewhere to go play. The English Premier League and the Championship, you know, very exciting places to play. No language barrier, similar cultures, things of that nature. I think you found it an easy transition. As time's gone on, we now have, well, going into our next season, there's 24 teams in MLS, plus we have USL, and there's a lot more places for players, outfield and goalkeepers to play. Do I think that you'll still see the odd keeper come over? Yes. When and if they're good enough. You asked about Zach Steffen, and Zach is, I coached him with the U20s a few cycles back. He is a very good athlete, very good talent. Went to Germany as a young keeper, found himself not getting a game, and he did a smart thing by coming to Columbus Crew, and he started to progress really well. He's gotten himself in and around the national team setup, and if there's a club that can sort out a deal for him and he can sort out work permit situations, I can see him having the ability to have a successful career over in England. And you know, a lot of that's going to come down now to the dollars and cents of the deal, the transfer fees, if there's a place open, you know, all things of that nature. But he is a talent, that's for sure.
So obviously you're a New England Revolution at the moment, but we don't really see many goalkeepers as head coaches and managers, do we? Why do you think that is? Do you think we're going to see more in the future?
I think there are a fair few of us out there. If you go and do a little search. I think at one stage back a fair few years ago, goalkeepers were pigeonholed as being the crazy ones or the eccentric ones. I do think that you can be a little bit eccentric and a little bit crazy, but one thing you can't be stupid to be a goalkeeper. You have to decision make too quickly. And I don't know too many of the top ones that you would categorize as not having a brain. So from my point of view, you're at a vantage point where you can see a lot of things happen, offensively, defensively, in and around certain areas of the field that where you're standing still watching it. So if you want to learn how to be a coach from a goalkeeper's vantage point, it's a great place to view it. I think when you get into the professional game and you go into management, a lot of it is the man management side of things. I think being involved in locker rooms until I was 44 years of age helped dramatically with that. I had a lot of tremendous head coaches and assistant coaches and chief execs and general managers over the years where I was able to learn from, and the from probably the last 5 or 6 years of my career when I started to get the bug of wanting to be a coach. I had the luxury of being around the likes of Martin O'Neill and Gerard Houllier and Harry Redknapp and then Andre Villas-Boas and Tim Sherwood and Mauricio Pochettino. And John McDermott gave me a lot of help the academy side of things at Tottenham. So I was around a lot of very, very good minds, all different styles of management, but I was able to hopefully take as much from all my experiences with those characters, and then take it in and be my own person with management. So, in my opinion, a goalkeeper has a tremendous position to be able to become a head coach. And if you want to play later on in your career, a goalkeeper is a great position to do so. It's all the mentality. If you want to become a goalkeeping coach or a first team coach or assistant manager or manager, there's no reason why a goalkeeper can't do that.
Brad, just wanted to ask you a quick one on ex-teammate Hugo Lloris. He's had a little bit of criticism this season, had a couple of really good games as well. What have you made of Hugo of late?
Well, Hugo's a very, very good goalkeeper. Completely different skill set than myself as a goalkeeper. You played with me, you haven't played with Hugo, but he's a different kind of goalkeeper when it comes to especially through balls coming off of his line. His quickness in and around his body is very, very good. Like most all of us, some of our weaknesses can be exposed, and sometimes it happens. Sometimes it happens where it would be, you know, 2 or 3 weekends in a row, but over a course of a season, Hugo's an outstanding goalkeeper and will be until the day he decides to retire. He's a very calm-minded individual, so if he does make a mistake or even two, it's not going to affect him or shouldn't affect him. I mean, the Hugo that I know, it wouldn't affect him long-term. Tottenham should be lucky to have a solid goalkeeper that doesn't miss too many games in a season. The odd game here and there, and for the most part, he's been a very consistent performer for him.
Great stuff. And lastly, just we always ask this: sum up what it means to be a goalkeeper in one sentence.
In one sentence.
I'll put you on the spot there.
You have to live your life or your career as a goalkeeper as you're never as good as you think you are, and you're never as bad as you think you are. It's always somewhere in between, and consistency is paramount.
Wise words. I told you, Zen master.
He is, yeah. Brad, you are very much the Obi-Wan Kenobi to Rich's Luke Skywalker. Thank you very much to Brad Friedel. Amazing to talk to a Premier League legend and the man that converted Richard Lee from a young Padawan into the Jedi we see before us today. That's it for this week's Goalkeepers Union podcast. Thank you very much to Matt Beadle.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to Richard Lee.
Thank you.
If you want to get in touch with us, it's at GK Union on Twitter. On Facebook, search GK Union. The hashtag is GK Union on Instagram. And if you want to drop us an email, hello@goalkeepersunion.net. We will see you next week.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.